said, we mentioned last week the Rambam, that says that if you attempt to use your own seichel, which is limited, to try to figure out things in the Torah, which is infinite, using your limited seichel for something that is infinite, and you insist that this is pshat in the Chumash itself, more so than the classical commentators, that would be considered like me'iwa, wrong to do, and that would require a kapara. We added that at the end, that you shouldn't miss the forest for the trees, that we have to understand the intention of why the Torah puts these things in, rather than concentrate on individual questions. To concentrate on an individual question of why this Av did this, or why that Shevet did that, although it's important to understand the concept of the Torah, to question your whole faith or belief based on it is the wrong type of question to make. To understand it as a whole, why would God have put that down, is a much stronger question than reaching to try to understand the mitzvah of the others. However, we have to go into that a little bit. This concept of the Rambam applies by every part of the Torah, conceivable part of the Torah. For example, halakha, agadata, and especially by stories, more so than anything else regarding stories. You mess up the stories of our avos and of the shvatim and of those that started and led our people. That means you're messing up the foundations of our entire nation. To say that Avraham Avinu was no less than one of the greatest tzaddikim to have ever lived is stating that the Jewish nation is not based on a pillar that is known as Avraham Avinu. And that's inconceivable. Inconceivable that a person that made huge mistakes and that did things like that would be considered the foundation and the ability to give us whatever we need for the rest of time. We can never say, there's no way for us to say, that the Torah is superfluous, that it uses words that are unnecessary, just because we don't understand what it's saying. Because even though I don't understand what it's trying to do, that doesn't mean that no one understands what it's trying to do. That definitely does not mean that HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Torah, right, could possibly be have something wrong with it, just because I don't understand it. Do you truly believe the Torah is from HaKadosh Baruch Hu? That's the question you have to ask. Do you truly believe that the Torah was given to us by Hashem? Then if you do, then you have to believe that if we took out one letter from the Torah, or if we would add on one letter from the Torah, be it that we think that this letter makes no sense, or that if we added on a letter it would make so much more sense. Nonetheless, if we believe that it was given to us from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, then literally if we would do so, we would destroy the entire world. That's the Gemara in Erev and Adaf Yud Gimel. Every word, every letter contains a hint to the past, present, and future. And that is not just a belief, it's an idea. It's famous that the Gro, that Rav Vilna Gaon, was famous for figuring out how Midrashim and other things somehow fit back into the Pasuk. That somebody would tell him, where does this fit in? Where does that fit in? And he would be able to tell him through a trump, through a gematria, through some type of nikud, whatever it was, he was able to darshan the Tagin, the Gro, to be able to figure it out. And although the Gro was not on the level of Rabbi Akiva, to darshan the Tagin backward into the drushes that Rabbi Akiva made out of it, the Gro was unbelievable enough to understand that if you put the words back in, you can figure out, you will be able to figure out yourself how to be able to see certain things in the Torah that you didn't see beforehand. That's the beauty of the Gro. To figure out that in the Parsha of Vayigash, Vayigash Elav Yehuda is Kadma V'Azla Revi, that the fourth son got up and went there because Darka Munach Segel, because he threw away his place in Olam Haba. And that's why Yehuda got up, and now Reuben, Shimon are lazy. It's an unbelievable idea that the Gro just throws out there as if it's so easy. If we really had it, if we could really find it. I just want to remind you guys, the Gro did not live very long ago. You probably know of a Jew who either saw or lived at the same time as the Chafetz Chaim. The Chafetz Chaim knew a Jew who saw the Vilna Gaon. Which means you're not that far apart from the Vilna Gaon. Three generations at the most, and I know it's more generations if you take it that way, but you're three generations away from a person who was able to do this with every letter of the Torah, with everything. That if you wanted a source for the Medrash, he would give you the source straight up in the pasuk. Now we have a Rav Chaim Kanievsky who's able to tell you where everything is, a Rav Avadi Yosef who's able to tell you where everything is, whether it comes to Allah or Chumash, that he's able to do, that there's no question they can do that. But to find the source of that Medrash within the actual words of the pasuk, it's only three generations ago. That's all it is. That's an amazing thing. That's why it's so important. For a person who is starting to learn Torah for the first time, he must learn it correctly. He can't rely on his own thinking, because if his approach is incorrect, he can have a completely different viewpoint, a completely messed up view of Judaism, of what we know to be Torah true Judaism, from everything else. He won't understand what the purpose of life is. He won't understand what his purpose in life is, or why Jews are here in the first place. So I could go through how the Avos are so great, and I could give you the idea of just trying to say that I will never measure up to somebody of the greatness of my Rosh Hashiva. My Rosh Hashiva will never measure up to his Rebbe, and his Rebbe to his Rebbe, and go all the way back. You could use an example of Rav Moshe Feinstein to bring him back and say he was not like the Chazon Ish. The Chazon Ish was not like the Chofetz Chaim. The Chofetz Chaim was not like Rebbe Akiva Iger. Rebbe Akiva Iger was not like the Grom. You could go back that way. I could do that easily and say that there's no way that anyone here could compare themselves to a Gadol of the 1500s or the 1600s. There's no way. First of all, we don't have that much. There's no way. And then to bring yourselves back to the Rambam, the Rit, do you really want to think that you could be as... I want to think that way. Do you really think that we're as great as the Rit or the Rambam? That's that. But I want to take it a different way. There's a concept called Maisa Avos Siman Labanim. Surprisingly, and I'm not positive this is correct, somebody knows it, I thought it was a Maimar Chazal, but I don't believe so. I think Maisa Avos Siman Labanim is only brought down by the Rishonim. If somebody could find something on that, I would love it. But the earliest known source that I could find, and granted I'm limited, I don't use computers, so I could only find the Ramban that brought down Maisa Avos Siman Labanim. The concept definitely existed before it, but the actual word, Rashi says something similar as well, but the early Rishonim, I see them saying the concept of Maisa Avos Siman Labanim. I don't believe it's a Gaonic period or a Talmudic idea, although I didn't have that much to be able to look up. But the concept is that every action that our forefathers did has a far-ranging effect than everything we did afterwards. So meaning, because the Avos did what they did, therefore something happened in the future that affected their kids in some way, shape, or form. For example, Avraham Avinu was promised 10 nations in the Bris Ben Abisar, that he would be the king over 10 nations, that his children would take over the land of the 10 nations. But when he ran after the four kings, he stopped by Dun and Chobah. Chobah is really where Dun was Chayiv. It wasn't a place. It was because Dun was Chayiv in the area, but he stopped right there. Because he didn't go any further, we were only given 7 nations and not 10. We could have had 10, but Avraham Avinu stopped, and because he stopped at that point, therefore we only have 7 nations, and that's what we inherited, and that's that. There's nothing else to talk about. We would have had 10 if not for the fact that Avraham Avinu stopped right there. Avraham Avinu and Sarai Aminu in Mitzrayim, going down the first time to Mitzrayim, mimicked almost exactly what happened to Bnei Yisrael when they went down to Mitzrayim. In the sense that somebody was taken, Sarai represents Yosef being taken, and brought eventually to Paro's palace, became a great gavul. There was a question of a riot being brought inside there. There was an idea of being jailed, the box that Sarai Aminu was put into when she was brought inside. There's an idea of them leaving with great riches. There's an idea of Makos happening to Paro. The whole thing mimics how Bnei Yisrael were supposed to leave Mitzrayim. Had anything happened differently, Chas v'Shalom, Sarai Aminu would have been touched by Paro inside the palace, then there would have been Gilui Arayos when the Jews were in Mitzrayim. Because Maisa Avos Siman Labanim and Sarai Aminu was not touched, Sarai Aminu didn't have anything done to her by Paro, therefore none of this happened to Bnei Yisrael. And in the contrast, Dina and Shechem, because Dina was taken by Shechem, that mimics Galus Yavam, where Bnei Yisrael were in Eretz Yisrael, Yaakov was in Eretz Yisrael, and yet still Dina was taken forcefully by Shechem, and there were laws made, and eventually the Jews, who were few in number, overcame the many that were many in number. And that 100% mimics the way Galus Yavam went, and the fact that we're learning in our Gemara, Ma'anes is a Besulos. It's because Dina was taken by Shechem. Dina was taken by Shechem. It's not just coincidental. This is mamish how it goes. That every single story in Tanakh that are mentioned by one of the Avos mimics. It shows us what's going to be in the future. Sometimes we can figure it out. Sometimes we have to be hinted to it by the Rishonim. Sometimes it is so obvious it smacks you in the face. And you sit there and you say to yourself, how in the world do people not see this? That's the idea of what it's supposed to be. We also have Avraham Avinu giving over to the Malach. We have water. We got the Mun. We got the Be'er Miriam. We got the clouds. Because of what Avraham Avinu did with the Malachim. All of this, every single part from one after the other. And the final one of Shlomo and Yosef Mitzadik, where there are these parcels of Vayeshev, Mikes, Vayigash. Everything represents what's happening now by Yitzchus of the Mashiach. What's happening now by the very, very end of times, where the Shvatim somehow represent those people in Klal Yisrael that are not following halacha in the best way possible. And Yosef Tzedek is supposed to represent the clearest of halacha, those people that are following halacha. Yet the other ones, the Shvatim, are the ones in charge, both in Eretz Yisrael and in America. And the Talmid and Chacham are looked down upon, thrown down in a pit, so to speak, sold down to other nations, as if they don't belong or as if they don't belong anywhere. It's a mimic. It shows you what Klal Yisrael is like at every given point. It's supposed to be that way. To look down and say that they were evil means that somehow that's going to affect the future and make it seem that evil things should happen in the future as well. You can't. These Maisim were so different. It's far-ranging. It's almost a nevuah, every single thing they were doing. It's as if it was a Kadosh Baruch Hu being involved in every single act to make sure that Klal Yisrael wouldn't be affected. And for us to say that there were bad ideas involved, it's hard. I just want to say, does anybody know the stories that we mentioned about Avraham Avinu and Tanakh? I mean, you all know them, but you know how many there are? I went through them last night. I said, you know, if we're going to say there were the stories of Avraham Avinu, we should probably pick the top stories of Avraham Avinu's life. But we barely know anything about Avraham. 16 Maisim are brought in about Avraham Avinu. 16 different Maisim, and I listed them down. Number one, traveling to Israel. The end of Noah, the beginning of Harsha's Lech Lecha. Number two, going down to Egypt. Number three, kicking out Lot. Number four, fighting against four kings. Number five, Bris Bina Bissarin. Number six, allowing Hagar to be kicked out. Number seven, Bris Milah. Number eight, this is Vayera now, the angels come in for a snack. Number nine, failing to save Sodom, he failed. Number 10, going to the Plishti land. Number 11, having Yitzchak and kicking Hagar out again with Yishmael. Number 12, making a treaty with Avimelech. Number 13, the Akedah. Now, Chai Yisara. Number 14, buying Maris Machpelah. Number 15, sending Eliezer to go get Rivka. Number 16, marrying Keturah and having six more kids. Could there be any stranger stories about the man that we know of as the Ish Chesed? How many Chesed-filled stories do you have here? The war against the four kings, kicking out Lot, kicking out Hagar twice, the Akedah. Where is the Chesed in that? We have one story of the Chesed of Avraham Avinu, and it's with the Malachim, and it didn't even work, because they were angels. That's it. You speak about Avos as if we understand them, as if we get what's going on with their lives. We know nothing of their lives. We have a picture of maybe 25 minutes altogether of their lives. And we think we know everything about them. Avraham Avinu lived for 175 years. And all we know about him is this. This is it. We have midrashim to be able to help us. But from the psukim themselves, all we're told is this. I'm not even going on to Yitzchak Avinu. How much do we know about Yitzchak? How much do we know about a man who lived 180 years and was considered an Akedah? He was willing to be a sacrifice to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. A korban to Hashem, he's coming. He's perfect in every which way. How much do we know about Yitzchak? And Yaakov, his whole life looks like a microcosm of the biggest pain in the world that you could possibly imagine. The Shivtei Ka, they have the Yud and the Hay of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's name, for goodness sake, inside the name. Yeah, what do we know about them? They look like bumbling fools throughout these parshios. I told you we shouldn't have done that. Yeah, I know. Well, what does it seem like? The psukim do not explain those even a tiny bit of what's going on behind here. And we think that we can have the audacity to imagine that we could say something about them? It's limited in what we're given. Just in what we're given. We don't have enough. We're not given anything for this. Every single day, and we mentioned this a little bit last week, we get up and we say, Elokei Avraham, Elokei Yitzchak, Elokei Yaakov. We mention them every single day, three times a day, aside from other fields where we mention the others. Every single day we mention them. If you get up and you say something terrible about them, you say that Avraham Avinu really meant this way, and Yitzchak wasn't really so great, and Yaakov Avinu really made a lot of mistakes, And we say that about them. What do you think they're saying about you in Shemayim? You get up and say, okay, Abraham, okay, Yitzchak, okay, Yaakov. And they sit down and they look at you and say, who are you? Who are you to mention my name? Just for my help. Who are you? You think you deserve me? You think you deserve to be my grandchild? My great-great-great-great-great-grandchild? Who are you? Thank God they're others. Because I know when my kids act like fools. And I'm not insulted by them. Even if they yell out, I hate you, Dad. Thank God I've never had it happen to me yet. Even if they, yes, that's a yes. They're not teenagers yet. They do it. Nonetheless, I'm still going to love them. Because I know they're just fools. They're little fools. They don't understand anything. It's not their fault. They're little kids. They're fools. They will not be, they're not going to understand anything until they get older. And I know that. So when my kids do stupid things, which I know eventually they'll do, I'll sit there and I'll say, I hear you. And I'm going to smile a little bit. And that's the way the others look down at us with. They smile at us a little bit. When we say, oh, here's John Abramovito. Abramovito sits down and he's like, that's hilarious. That's hilarious. He thinks that's John. He really thinks that's John. That's absolutely hilarious. We go up to Shemayim. Abramovito, I had a great shot near my son. And you look and you see that Abramovito is this small ball of fire. This sun staring at you and you're just like, oh, I can't even look at you. You think you're going to be able to tell over your shot in Abramovito's face? You think you're going to be on anywhere near the level of the Shvatim are? And the only reason you would be and the only reason why you're allowed to is because they know, you know, it's a little kid. It's not that big of a deal. Not that big of a deal if he goes ahead and says this about me. If he thinks that I really slept with my stepmother, if he really thinks that I was together with Izona, if he really thinks that we sold the Yosef Atzadik because we were jealous and we wanted to throw him in a pit, and then we sold him the Arabs because we're jealous of him because he had a dream. They really think that way. Let him be. That's why I am with my kids, and I can understand how the others should be. How have I let it be that way? Because if the others are not thinking that way, then you're dead. then it's not even close. Then it's just like, get him for you, and don't pass go, do not collect the $200, and there's nothing else to talk about. How have I that the others will be on the level where they understand we're just little kids who make mistakes? Oh, that's that. I love the person who told me a week and a half ago that said, I like looking at the others and saying that they're not perfect. Because if they make mistakes, right, then I'll relate to them more. I'll be more, you know, it'll be more relatable. It'll be more relatable. There is no sillier kind of the Yitzhahara than that. There's no sillier kind of that you can say what you want about the others so that you can relate to them better. Were you kidding me? That's going to make you better? Not that they're perfect individuals and you want to eventually emulate their mindset, but by them making mistakes, that makes you more like them? What, you really need that pick-me-up in your ego to be able to say to yourself, yeah, Abraham wasn't that much greater than me. I mean, come on. He was just a kid. He just made mistakes. The Shvatim, they were in that. Come on. It is pure gaiva that makes you say that. There is nothing else involved in that. There is no l'shem shamayim in trying to say to yourself, I'm putting down the avos and the shvatim in order for me to get a pick-me-up and to be able to inspire myself. No. That's not what they're there for. That's not what they were put in a chumash. That makes no sense. That, what that really tells you is, buddy, take a long look at yourself. Sit there, honestly, look at yourself in a mirror and say, do you really think that that's the reason why Kadosh Baruch Hu put them in the Torah? Because they were normal human beings, so they would be relatable to you. Do you really think that that's what Kadosh Baruch Hu wanted? If that's what you really think, then I think you might have to turn that mirror around a little bit. Maybe sit and stare at the wall for a little while. And then look back after a little bit and say to yourself, that cannot be. That is not the leaders of our nation. It never was and it never will be. Our people, yes, they have made mistakes. Yes, there were leaders and we're very critical of our leaders in the Torah itself. But to say that I'm just like them, just a little bit off. You are not like them. I wish we were. But we are not, we are absolutely not like them. But that's okay. You have a different mission. Your mission is not to start a brand new nation. Thank God. Your mission is to not destroy what they have built up. That's your mission. Your vision is not going to be, unless there's someone here who I'm telling you of a thief to be Megala yourself if you're Mashiach. But your vision is not going to be build up the third base of Mikdash and make peace between all the Arab nations and Israel. No one here is like that. Maybe. If you are, again, be Megala yourself. It's that we need it. This is the time. Iran is enough already. It's time to get up. But that's not our job. Our mission is don't mess it up. Don't mess it up. So be careful with what you say. Be careful with how you say it. You want them on your side. Remember that. Always treat them with the greatest respect out there. The greatest respect that you could possibly give them. And if you want to understand a Maisa, treat it the way it should. Treat it as you would yourself if you were in that situation. Yourself. If you were trying to explain yourself over, where you're sitting there and saying, this is how I would have done, or this is what I would have done, and think of yourself, did you really think that they just gave in to Titus? Is that really a thought? And if it is, how did that guy become an Av? How did that guy become a Shevet? How did that person have the name of HaKadosh Baruch Hu put upon them? How did that person lead a nation of Klal Yisrael? If it's just that of Titus, what was it? And that's what I mean by, don't lose the forest for the trees. Don't think about little individual meisim and think about how that could be without first understanding what the Torah was getting at in the first place. Once you understand the klal, now get into the prat and try to understand every single part. But until you get the klal, the prat will never come together. You'll never be able to get it together. That is that, guys.